Thank you, Chair. If I may. Oh, of course. Yeah, well, I was just looking at looking at me. I am David Daly, the Special Advisor to the Minister.
Member to the committee. I'm from the Independent Democrats.
Good morning, I'm Patty Duncan, I'm a member of the ADA committee. I'll use my rally voice. I'm Manana Take, I'm the member of the committee. Good morning, I'm Crystal Levendale, researcher to the committee.
Good morning, I'm Mukesh Batson, I'm the legal advisor.
Good morning, my name is Dorothy Ramodibe, chairperson of the ADO committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tebogo Spanya, the secretary of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Gillian Wolfen from National Treasury, Chief Director of Public Finance, CB.
Morning. My name is Tim Bekile Plaiki, Parliamentary Advisor, National Treasury.
Good morning. My name is Lawrence van Vieren from the Auditor General.
Morning, I'm Thomas Mamremi, the national organizer of NEHAU.
Hi, I'm Neil Newman. I'm the researcher, NEHAU's parliamentary researcher.
Honorable members and colleagues, my name is Kemba Mteta from the Public Protector.
Good morning, my name is Victor Machoba, the parliamentary liaison officer to the Minister of Finance. This is not functional. My name is Tipuo Mashaba, the parliamentary liaison officer of the Minister of Economy. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I'm Abdallah Driscoll from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm
Thank you for the introduction. You always feel comfortable when you know with whom you are sitting here. I think some of us might be surprised as to why we have the union here. And let me just say that they are representing the staff from CGE, who also have issues to that of concern to raise with us, and we allow them to come in. This morning, we will be having briefings from the AG's office and the public protector on the progress report. They will give us their findings on the progress report that was given by the CGE last week. As you all remember, that this committee is dealing with the forensic investigation report of both the AG and the public protector. And this is our area where we are expected from the outcome to give a report to Parliament and recommendation. And this morning we also have with us the Treasurer's Office. We are having Ms. Gillian Wilson, who will then also be giving us a briefing. And thereafter, we will have the AG and the public protector, and then and the union. I hope that we won't get to a stage where we will have to ask some of us here to excuse themselves. At this point in time, I will then give over to you to give us a briefing. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone, again. I'm from National Treasury. My name is Gillian Wolfen. Basically, the committee wanted National Treasury to respond to three areas. So one was the budget process for the commission. The other was our response to the report of the public protector. And the third one was our response to the report of the Auditor General. I am going to be very brief because I feel that the different parties that compiled the report has probably much more to say than myself. I've compiled a short presentation just to give us our view on the three areas. Chairperson, is that what the committee wanted us to respond to? Thank you very much. So I'll just basically focus on those three areas, so without giving too much detail. I took the liberty of compiling just a short presentation to give the committee our response to the three areas. And I think in slide one, I just wanted to give the background to all of this, what happened and what was reflected in the report. I think that is important to note that institutions like the Commission for Gender Equality is supported, supporting constitutional democracy or independence and subject only to the Constitution and the law and a specific section in the Constitution specifically states that. It's also important to note that no persons or organ of the state may interfere with the functioning of the Chapter 9 institutions. And that's also stated in the Act of for Gender Equality and also in the Constitution. What makes it more difficult for us in terms of the whole budget process and the Commission for Gender Equality is that according to the PFMA, before transferring any funds to an entity or outside government, the accounting officer must obtain a written assurance from the entity that implements effective, efficient and transparent financial management and internal control systems. And that's what happened when there's a transfer payment coming from a department to an entity. Then before that money is transferred, that department must ensure that internal controls are in place. It must be certified by the entity. And that stipulation in the PFMA doesn't apply to your constitutional entity. In slide two, I thought it was important to also give a little background on the accountability structure of the Commission for Gender Equality. I've looked at the Constitution, I've looked at the Act, and this is what the Act is saying, is that Section 119 of the Constitution provides for the establishment of the Commission for Gender Equality and determines the member of the Commission and the requirements for their appointment. The Act also stipulates that the Commission shall consist of a chairperson, no fewer than seven members, and not more than 11 members. Commission shall appoint suitable qualified persons as a CEO in consultation with the Minister of Finance. So that is where National Treasury come in. And all persons appointed by the Commission shall receive remuneration, allowances, and employment benefits and be appointed on terms and conditions and the period as determined by the Commission in consultation with the Minister of Finance. And from the findings in the two reports, we are not sure whether that consultation actually took place when people were appointed and with certain benefits were communicated to the people that was appointed. In terms of the accountability structure, the CEO that's appointed by the Commission is responsible for the management, administrative control of the staff, and shall be accountable to the Commission. So our understanding is that you get the Commission, which is the executive authority. The Commission appoints the accounting officer, and the accounting officer is then responsible to the Commission for the work that he does or she does. The CEO also performs functions assigned by the Commission in order to achieve the objectives of the Commission and for that purpose shall be accountable to the Commission. In the next slide, I just give more background in terms of what the two reports is saying in terms of the internal control environment of the Commission. Now, the PFMA is very clear that there should be a clear distinction. This is not echoing. There should be a clear. Can I? Okay. The PFMA is very clear that there should be a distinction between the accounting officer and the body that the accounting officer is accountable to. And that applies to the accounting officer and also the acting accounting officer. and that person should be an officer of the commission. National Treasury may approve that a person other than the CEO can be appointed as the accounting officer. So I think that for me is an important point in terms of the internal control environment within the commission, basic principles that need to be applied to. According to the reports that was tabled, and I'm referring to the public protector's report, it says that principle was violated when the office of the chairperson was subsumed into the office of the CEO, and this appointment also blurred the lines between the accounting officer responsible for sound financial management and the commission, which is the executive, that the accounting officer was accountable to. The PFMA does also not provide for a member of the executive or two persons to be appointed as the accounting officer. And I think we must also look at that principle, whether that principle was applied in the commission. We want to make the statement that the internal control environment of the commission is not good for achieving the objects of the commission. And the report of the AG specifically is saying is that the control environment is high risk and also susceptible to fraud. That is stated in the report of the AG. There's also no clear procedures that guide the relationship between the interaction between the commission and the administration of the Commission for Gender Equality. The AG report also cited there's a lack of leadership and a failure of the executive to take action on all the previous reports that was presented to the executive on a previous occasion. Okay, then on my next slide, I just give an outlay of the PFMA. What's the PFMA saying in terms of financial misconduct by public officials, and what the Treasury's role is in that area. Chapter 10 of the PFMA, Treasury Regulation 4, provides for the procedures to be followed in addressing the allegations of financial misconduct and maladministration by officials, including the accounting officer. The PFMA makes a distinction between irregularities by the accounting officer and misconduct, financial misconduct by a normal person that's responsible in the commission, responsible to the accounting officer. The PFMA also clearly states what the constitution, what constitutes financial misconduct, disciplinary and criminal procedures to be followed amid allegation of financial misconduct against officials. Section 84 of the PFMA provides for the applicable legal regime for disciplinary proceeding as follows. A charge of financial misconduct against an accounting officer or official referred into Section 1083 or an accounting authority or member of an accounting authority or an official referred in Section 82 must be investigated. And I think that is what most of the reports are requesting, that these are things that be found and it should be investigated. Heard and disposed of in terms of the statutory and other conditions of appointment of or employment applicable to that accounting officer, an authority, or a member or official, any regulations prescribed by the minister in terms of Section 85. It also further said that the Minister of Finance said the regulations and prescribing procedures to be followed in the event of the financial misconduct by an official. These regulations describe, among other things, the manner, form and circumstances of reporting such allegations to the National Treasury and Auditor General, matters relating to the investigation, circumstances in which the National Treasury or Provincial Treasury may direct disciplinary steps, and the circumstances in which the finding of a disciplinary board and any sanctions imposed by the board must be reported to National Treasury and the Auditor General. Then we also looked at further stipulations in the PFMA the accounting officer must within 30 days from the date of, this, of the discovery of an alleged financial misconduct ensure that an investigation is conducted into the matter if confirmed, ensure that disciplinary hearing is held in accordance to the applicable prescripts and agreements in the public service. Also goes further by saying if the allegations against the accounting officer, the relevant treasury as soon as must be notified as soon as you become aware of the alleged misconduct. I think these for me are important to make sure that they after irregular expenditure is investigated that these procedures are followed according to the PSMA. In the next slide, it also goes further to other things that's important for us, that if there is a regular expenditure is incurred, institution needs to obtain the necessary authorization to regularize the expenditure. And that is the procedure that needs to be followed by the entity or the department. Irregular expenditure register determine that if the expenditure is irregular, there must be an investigation indicated in the annual financial statement. Submit request to National Treasury for condemnation. If not condoned by National Treasury, that money should be recovered by from the official. Okay, I think the crux of my presentation is actually these two slides because there was three findings from the public protector that they want the National Treasury to actually respond to specifically. And the one finding was the appointment of the two members of the executive as CEO. And the report is saying that the appointment of the two members of the executive as CEO appeared to be in contravention of the PSMA and the Act guiding the Commission and is therefore unlawful and irregular. That is what the public protector report is saying. Therefore, they are requesting National Treasury to do an investigation and to give confirmation that this is actually an irregular expenditure. Our response is that we refer this finding to our legal section just to give us an indication whether further investigation is needed and what is the action that National Treasury need to take on that. I'm not sure when I read the Public Protector report they are not conclusively saying that there is irregular expenditure. They say there might be irregular expenditure. So I think it's from National Treasury side, we must make sure that it's actually irregular expenditure that took place with that finding. And obviously when there is irregular expenditure, it must also be reported to National Treasury as soon as it becomes known to the entity. And request a National Treasury to take action on that. The second finding was a 4 million rand that was spent on an organizational diagnostic process, and according to the report, there was no tangible result that can be of any value of to the organization. This appeared to expenditure that was made in vain. And could have been avoided, and reasonable care should have been taken to avoid this expenditure, and it constitutes fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Our response is that we would like to listen to the response by the Commission on this, to look at documentation to show that this money that was spent on this process actually derived value, If necessary, we want if the documentation is not satisfactory, we feel that that money should be recovered. Again, the third area that they want that the public protector wants National Treasury to respond is the appointment of a consultant as a CEO and accounting officer, which the public protector is indicating that it appeared not to be in line with the PSMA, because at the time when the consultant was appointed, that person was not an official of the commission. So the public sector report is saying that the expenditure relating to that appeared to be irregular expenditure, and they want an investigation in that. I think our response is in line with the first finding, is that we are referring this finding to our legal section to advise us in terms of whether further investigation is needed. But with both findings, we are not sure whether at this stage whether if it was a regular expenditure, whether that irregular expenditure can be recovered from the officials. But we have forwarded this to our legal section to give us a legal opinion on that. On the AGIS report, I think in the if you read through the AG report, it just indicates of a entity with a weak internal controls. There was a lot of findings there, and we want to concur with the Accounting General that there must be a corrective plan put in place by the Commission, and we as National Treasury would play a support function to monitor the implementation of that corrective plan by the Commission. Okay, then on the next slide, we just briefly give our interactions between National Treasury and or interventions between National Treasury and the Commission thus far. In September 2008, there was a briefing done between the Minister of Finance and the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the Commission's financial management matters. This briefing led to a meeting that was held on the 3rd of November 2008 between the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, National Treasury, and the Commission. In that meeting, National Treasury advised the Commission to prioritize the filling of critical posts, that is the post of the CFO and the CEO, and that internal stability need to be created. As a result, then, the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development seconded a chief director budget to the Commission, and he assumed his duties in the Commission on the 12th January 2009. Then in January 2009, the Deputy Speaker of Parliament was assured by the chairperson of the Commission that the Commission has turned the corner, capable of discharging its constitutional mandate. Also mentioned that there is a turnaround strategy and that the regular reports will take place between the Commission and Parliament. On the next slide, it's important to note that the Commission actually moved from a disclaimer in 2008 and 2009 to a qualification in 2009 and 10. It's just an observation that most of the management positions are vacant. The CEO's position was filled in August 2009. The CFO interviews will be held the first week of February. In most findings, especially the Auditor General, is an indication of a lack of internal control and weak control environment. Limited personnel, there's a problem with the segregation of duties. But we also positive to see what impact. I think they started implementing the turnaround strategy in May last year to see what impact that turnaround strategy has on the Commission. I thank you, Jacob.
Thank you. think the ad hoc committee was voted for this kind of a report from the European Council arising from the report of the committee I would now give you the opportunity to ask questions of clarity and also take you up into account that you may not ask questions that are now related to your review and review. And I then give you the opportunity to
honourable member, thank Manana, you. And then I'll come. Honourable member, thank you. And then member, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so a question of clarity. I would just like to know how long it's going to take before the legal advisor
We have
can we just take some few, another two?
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wish to thank the report. I have asked at the previous meeting we had for the AD and the public protector, and now since the Treasury is here this morning, I wish to ask why, if you look at the legislative framework where Chapter 9 institution now comes forth to the National Assembly, and since the CGE has been with other departments such as justice, why don't Treasury fund the CGE as a private institution directly? Why does it have to fall under any particular department? And why was in the past, why was it not put under the Ministry for Finance? Because they appoint, apparently according to the information that you've given us here today, they actually appoint the CEO, and then of course they also look at the accounting officer. So I'm just really concerned about the fact that Treasury is putting this the CGE and the Chapter 9 institution actually under departments there, and they have actually no influence other than council oversight. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will definitely respect the principle of the sub judice or the pendency that the matter is still pending before the court. Ms. Wilson, I just want to find out, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I listened to your report, it would appear that the National Treasury is still busy with the work, most especially when some of the aspects, some of the issues are referred to your legal question. Now the question arises, are you saying at the moment the National Treasury is still wishing to continue with this work? I'm asking you the question specifically because as an ad hoc committee, we are by nature not having a long time to stand. We have to come to a closure of this commission, give a report to Parliament. My worry is, will we be closing our chapter with you while you are still continuing with your duties relating to the commission? And then also, it would appear the problems such as they are dating back from 2008 and the like, and there is some plans, general strategic plans. Are you in a position to say, as matters stand now, can we say there is life in the committee for equality, or things have not changed as from 2008. Are we in a position to say there is now life, we are in a position to say things have been corrected? Thank you for that.
Let me just I just need clarity on the issue of the CEO position. Was it not filled on August 2010? Not 2009. And the CEO, the CFO position, still vacant.
I think on the first question, in terms of the legal opinion and how long it's going to take, I don't want to make any excuses, but this is probably one of the busiest periods for National Treasury because it's busy with the budget process. But I can safely say that we're working towards the end of this month to get the legal opinion and to see whether, when I spoke to the Accountant General this morning, he was of the opinion that no further investigation is needed. But it's important for us to get that legal opinion, and we're working towards the end of this month to get that legal opinion. I think you have raised a very important point, and I'm not sure whether I'll be the correct person to answer that, because that is how the structure of commission was set up in terms of the, if you read through the Act, that is how the structure was set up. In terms of what the intention was, because in actual fact, you are raising a very important point, is that why doesn't the transfer of funds take place from National Treasury to the Commission? Why has to go through a conduit? I think probably a legal person can answer that, but that is how the law was basically set up for the Commission. And I'm not sure whether I'll be able to answer that. But your point that you made is very valid. Also stated in the report is that the stipulations in the Act, the Gender Commission Act, is very outdated. And that is why such a lot of things is happening, that you have commissioners acting as a CFO, as the accounting officer, and all of that. And I think there should be a process from Parliament to review that legislation. And the point that you've mentioned is probably one of the points that must be looked at in terms of how the commission is structured. So I would actually welcome that there is some work being done or started in terms of looking at the legislation to see, I mean, how it can be improved. And that will also sort of improve the internal control environment of the commission. I'm sorry I answered your question so along the line, but I think that is how the Act is set up, and we have to review the Act to see how that can be improved. And I think the third question was also along, we're still going to take. I think from National Treasury would like also to speed up things so that we can also assist the Commission in terms of compiling the report. So we are working towards the end of this month to actually get everything together and to give the advice to the Commission in terms of our standing in terms of those findings in the Public Protector report.
Sorry.
February. Thank you, please. I'm not sure whether I can answer the fourth question in terms of is there life in the agency now? Have they turned the corner? I think the last report to Parliament was that there's going to be monthly reports flowing from the Commission to Parliament in terms of the implementation of the turnaround strategy. And I'm not sure whether that report actually flowed from the Commission to Parliament. What I'm reading is that they started implementing the turnaround strategy from May last year. Looking what is happening in terms of the report the end of October and public sector report and the AIDS report, I'm not sure whether the turnaround strategy had implications up to the point where we actually got the report. For me, all indications is there that there's still a lot of work to be done in the Commission in terms of the internal control environment. That is actually what the report is saying. I've got no evidence for the Commission to say that this is a good thing that happened and they're busy turning the corner now. I've got nothing substantial to say to the Commission. So I'm actually working on the report of the public protector and the AG's report, which indicate that it's a high-risk, weak internal control environment. There's no indications for me that there's any changes taking place. Okay, in terms of the CEO position, I speak under correction. I might not have the correct date, but maybe somebody from the Commission can actually give us that information, whether the CEO has been appointed or whether that position is still vacant. It was in August last year. CEO was appointed in August last year. Okay, 2010. Okay. So I can just make some amendments on page 11. The CEO position was filled in 2010, August, and the CFO interviews will take place first week in February this year, which is 2011.
Responded to. Thank you. I think before I take honourable member, I also want us maybe to also look at the date for the implementation of the turnaround strategy, which was only brought to the attention of the committee in 2010. And in terms of your report, you say 2009.
The turnaround strategy was implemented from May 2010. Yeah, that's right.
Honourable Member Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. Just another point of clarity, please. Ms. Wilson has said that monthly reports are going to be given to Parliament about the progress. Now, I just want to check when we're talking about Parliament or this committee, the ad hoc committee, or the committee for women, children, and persons with disabilities. Because I think one of the problems that has arisen in the past, that the CGE was reporting to Parliament, to the Speaker, and to Justice, but in fact nothing was being done, and they were not being monitored effectively. So I think it's very important for this committee to ensure that they come to the to this committee while it stands, and then to women, children, and persons with disability who are now responsible for it and who are going to be having a very much more hands-on approach. So if you could just clarify. Thank you.
I don't know if I'm the right person to clarify that one. What I'm reading is that the report must go to the Speaker. That's what I'm reading. I'm not sure how that information will flow from the speaker to this committee, but I'm reading the reports by saying that the speaker will get this monthly report from the commission.
Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Wilson. May I just indicate to this House that this ad hoc committee meeting, only members of Parliament are allowed to participate, and not, other members from other structures or stakeholders. And then when we entertain again with the AG and the PP, it will only be members of Parliament who will be allowed to raise questions. Thank you very much, members. Can we then proceed to AG? Are you ready? Are you ready, or must I start with the PP? By the way, members, what we are expecting here is a response by the AG and the PP, which arises from the progress report that was given by CGE. Over to you, AG.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. Having briefed this committee on the findings and the recommendations of the investigation that was conducted, we then also looked at what the CGE plans to do or has done in order to address some of our findings and move forward. I must mention that since this report and this briefing happened in November, some of the steps that the CGE plans to take or has taken have actually not happened, and that's purely because of the time frame. But we're encouraged by some of the steps that they've taken to address the issues that we raised in our report, specifically the issues relating to amendment of policies and the putting of delegations in place. One of the key findings that was contained in the AGSA report was that there were some policies that were not in place and some delegations that were not there, and that compounded some of the issues and the difficulties that the Commission was faced with. So what I would like to do, members, is to look briefly at some of the slides that the CGE presented to the committee last week on the 26th of January and give my comments in relation to that. I must apologize that I did not bring a presentation for this committee, but my comments are so little that I didn't go into that elaborate process. In relation to the first slide that relates to bank and cash management on the presentation done by the CGE, you will recall, Honourable Members, that one of the things that we said to this committee was that there were a lot of discrepancies between the bank, the check staff, and the bank statements, and that had was a significant risk for fraud and theft for the Commission. And in that slide, there we note that the CGE has now implemented the process of EFT transfer and are no longer writing checks for amounts in excess of 2,000 rand. I think that greatly reduces the risk that we had identified in our last report. They have also closed the call account, and they have now regularized the issues of the 10 irregular bank accounts that they had, and they've obtained approval then for, so we encourage by that, we believe that that substantial risk that was presented by huge amounts being transferred and paid by check, that does assist. In relation to supply chain environment, one of our findings related to the fact that as the CGE did not have a fully functional supply chain management unit, a lot of the problems that we were able to pick up related directly to that. They say that a unit has been created and has been functional. I believe they are capacitating that. I think that will assist them a lot. In relation to them putting up a supplier database, one of the things that we never really probed was the issue of conflict of interest and whether the CGE was procuring services in an efficient and economic manner. The problem with them not having a supplier database is that people could and would have actually used that opportunity to make sure that people that they know get contracts, they get appointed as service providers. So having a supplier database does reduce the risk that was there. And we'll also assist them to be able to procure services in an efficient and economic manner. The issue of delegation is also key. The control environment was there was very weak in that people acted outside of the delegations, and the delegations were unclear, and most of the time there were no proper delegations. And when you introduce delegation, what follows is the proper segregation of duties, and the necessary checks and balances are introduced. So that is a very good step that the CGA has taken. In relation to claims and subsistence claims, the main issues there had been also the issue of delegations and the absence of policies. And they have now put a cell phone policy in place. You would recall that there was an instance of one cell phone bill over a month period that was over 40,000 rand, and that happened primarily because there was no policy. So having a policy will assist them to control their expenditure and to make officials and the members of the commission to be accountable. In relation to the last slide, that deals specifically with the issues relating to Mrs. Gaza, the matters are before a court of law and will be threshed out at that level. So in a nutshell, that they have put policies, they are aligning their policies and their processes to National Treasury and regulations, and the PFM is very encouraging, and the risk for fraud and theft is being greatly reduced by them putting up a supplier database, putting up allegations, and also by closing down those many accounts and using electronic funds transfer. Have they turned the corner, or have they? Are they now where we can say they're at a good stage? I think some of the issues require time. But given this presentation, I am confident that they have started on a journey of turning the institution around.
Thank you. Honourable members, can I suggest that we take the next presentation and then we engage in both? Can we take that process? Thank you very much. Can I then allow the public protector to proceed? Can I allow the public protector then to give us the presentation? Over to you, sir.
Thank you, honorable member. I will send the presentation just after this, as we are trying to finalize with the secretariat. As well, but I will take the members through to our observation, to the CGE response, and to our findings as well. As you know, members, the public protector and the AG decided to divide the investigation in line with each other's mandate. I will then take you through to what we did in respect of our mandate as a public protector, and then to look at what the CGE indicates that they have done. Some of the findings, of course, did not precisely need CGE to intervene. For instance, the first finding was relating to the Act itself, the Commission on Gender Equality Act. We definitely find that the Act needs amendment. and that the act may not be in line with the constitution. It may need to be harmonized with the constitution as well. So we haven't seen anything on the CGE response if somehow any of those processes are in fact taking place. We're not sure whether is it the National Assembly or the Ministry on Women at this point. But we did find that the commission, the Gender Commission Act, the Gender Equality Act, needs to be amended. The second point that we made the finding on was the less number of prescribed commissioners, which was in violation of the Act, that existed around about October due to the resignation. There may be some legal implications on the decisions taken when in fact the number of commissioners don't meet the required number as prescribed in the Act. And we didn't see anything on the CGE report that that has been attended, or at least that there is a process to have that being attended. We also mentioned that this, contrary to some of the view of the members, that CGE was not monitored, to the fact that this was not the first report that the public protector has issued in respect of CGE. But previous to that, there was a report that was issued, and it did report again that there is nothing indicating that that previous report, and the recommendation made by the public protector, was in fact being implemented. And as such, we don't see anything referring to that earlier report in the presentation that CEG submitted to this committee. The other finding as well, Chair, relates to the treatment of Babalisa Chartered Accountants when they had their contract being terminated. As the public protector, we felt that they have been treated inhumane, and that CG, to a certain extent, may have at least offered them an apology in the manner in which they were treated in the termination of the contract. They have responded to the fact that to do so would be tantamount to an admission of guilt on their part. We're not sure how far that matter is. We're not sure if that matter is in a court of law. But as a public protector, we did make a finding that the action on the part of CGE may border or was somehow unlawful. Probably we may have to engage the CE on that as well to find out why do they think such would be tantamount to guilt, or whether in fact the matter is in a court of law, which we are unaware of it. As well. In respect of the appointment of two commissioners as the CEO, we're not hesitant to say that amounted to maladministration and improper conduct, because there should be a clear distinction between the accounting officer and the accounting authority. And obviously the National Treasurer has indicated that we did actually, by the way, submit our report on the 6th of October last year to the Director General of National Treasury to actually attend to this matter. We're happy to hear that the National Treasury now will have sent this matter to their legal advisors to advise what is it that can be done. Because we felt that even the payment may amount to irregular expenditure. And we hope that the AG is going to be the National Treasurer will look this as it flouts their treasury regulations. We also refer to the issue of the two employees of CGE, Ngumalo and Moloko. We indicated that we found out that they are moving around within the organization without consultation may have been unfair and unjustified. We didn't see anything, I'm not sure that I missed it, in the report to indicate if this has been looked at or what is the position is in respect of these employees. We also raised the issue of the $4 million that was spent in what they called organizational diagnostic process. We indicated that there's nothing tangible to show that there was value for money in respect of that process. And we asked National Treasury as well to look at that because we felt that this was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure and it needed to be investigated in terms of the Treasury regulations. I'm not sure if my colleague did mention that they were looking at this $4 million as well and the means to recover it because we really felt that it was like throwing good money after bad. Nothing tangible came out of that process. We also looked at the spokesperson of CGE being appointed as the acting coordinator in the provinces, and we found that the creation of those posts in the office of the chairperson were somehow irregular and constituted maladministration. But I'm glad that they have indicated that they are looking at the policies and regulating their employment as well. We also touched at the capacity of both the staff complement and skills in the finance department. We're happy that they've indicated that they've done the skills audit. We'd definitely like to know the outcome of the skills audit, Honorable Chair, and what was the outcome and what action will be taken in case the outcome is not satisfactory as well in that regard. We felt that the appointment of the CFO was more critical and we really hope that something's going to happen this week. It is the most critical post in that organization. They have come up that they are coming up with policies, but we definitely could see more arrangements or more regulations, regularization of the interaction between the commission and the official in the office. We didn't see that there's any guidelines or any specific policy relating to the interaction between the commissioners and the officials, particularly the secretariat. The issue of Mr. Sichete has been touched by the Treasury, the appointment as the consultant and the CEO, and as the CEO, and we still believe that that needs to be investigated and see if this can be recovered from the people involved, as it amounted to irregular expenditure and flouted the Treasury regulations. We'll definitely like to have a look at the housing allowance policy, which we felt that the CGE did not have, but I hope it's one of those policies that I've mentioned in there. And also feel that they still have to do more on the OSD. In their report, they indicated that there is no clarity whether their staff qualify for OSD. There are experts on OSD within the department and public service and administration, which I would definitely like them to consult with, including the Department of Justice as well, on the OSD in case there is some doubt on their part as well. Performance assessment, we have indicated that the failure to do the 209 to 10 performance assessment was in conservation of their own performance management guidelines that needs to be attended to. We'd definitely like to see them reporting on the outcome of that as well. We also found out that their policy framework was outdated and inadequate, and we notice now that they are actually working on updating their policy framework, and we're really, really heartened with that, because we felt that the policies within any organization are the most critical instrument that governs the relationship between itself and its employees and the commissioners as well. You'll see if you read the report that it was the feeling of the public protector if the policies were quite strong and respected within that organization, most of what arose would not have arisen. We also felt that there should be some policy or even a rotation regarding the opportunities to attend the annual meeting of the Commission on the Status of Women among the staff as well. That also applies to the annual trip to New York to avoid any favoritism taking place on that. In the report, I didn't see that the Commission has actually addressed that issue. As part of remedial action, we precisely ask the National Assembly to do two things. One, to look at the amendment of the TC Act because the felt was outdated, and two, to fill the vacancies of the commissioners, as we still believe that there's some legal loopholes regarding the actions being taken if the commissioner or the commission itself does not comply with the legislation, with its founding legislation. It may have some serious legal consequences as well. We had asked the DG of National Treasury as well to specifically look at the irregular expenditure incurred by Commissioners Hicks and Loilane as well. So we hope they, in that report that they have sent, they will then come and report on us on that. We also ask them to look at Sechedi to see if they can recover any of those monies. We ask them to look at the occupational diagnosis process, which we felt that $4 million was, in fact, a wasteful expenditure. We also felt that somehow something needs to be done as well regarding the Babiso matter, as well as the organizational diagnostic process. We're not sure whether it's the work of the National Treasurer, but we somehow somebody needs to intervene and verify the qualifications and skills of the staff within CGE. But we hope that the process that is being done will attend to this. We also raised the issue of the induction, and we have noted in the report that induction has been done and it is being done. We're happy with that. We still feel that something needs to be done to improve the skills within the finance department. Obviously, I've mentioned the issue of the review of the Act, and that's very important, and to determine the certainty of the OSD as well, and to ensure that performance assessment is done 2009-10 and 2010-2011, and of course the rotation of the staff nominated to attend the annual meeting on the Commission on Status of Women in New York. Chair, this was the observations that we have noticed on this. The report will definitely follow.
Thank you very much. I think members will be following. So, without wasting any time, can I then give the opportunity for members to engage in the discussion? Honourable Member Sibanyoni.
I'm referring to the input by the lady from the office of the AG. You know, it relates to the question I asked to Ms. Wilson. It would seem that we are dealing here with the problem that existed in the past, a problem that today, as we are, has been taken care of. More especially, all the requirements to comply with the PMSA and the like. When I'm listening to you, it seems as if a person can say we are now confident that the CGE, the Commission for Gender Equality, is now on track and the like. I would like you to comment on that.
Honourable Member Blackett.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I would like to hear from the Public Protector. Seemingly from what we have just heard, the CGE has not done anything as far as the recommendation had. So I would like to know what is the way forward from the Public Protector side? What are you going to do since matters are, things are just as they were? And putting in the light that this ad hoc committee is short-lived. So I can see there's a lot of, a list of things that were not done, your recommendations. So I would like to know what is the way forward from now on, vis-a-vis the short-lived cycle of the ad hoc committee.
Thank you, Chair. I just wish to make a very friendly request and comment. I know it's not always easy to formulate or to get to be ready with presentations, but I do urge departments to not see it as elaborate, but rather to for us as members to prepare so that when you are here, that we do ask relevant questions. I then wish to ask, there are two reports, quarterly reports from the CGE, and I wish to ask and find out where the Treasury, the AG, and also the Public Protector has seen these two reports, and whether indeed it comes to you or what the process for their quarterly report in fact is. The reason why I'm asking is like my colleague has said, and my other colleague on my left, that we are sitting with old problems that came on for a long time. So we want to prevent, and they have already underspent. And underspending to me is as dangerous as overspending. So I just wish to ask. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Can we respond to the question?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. With regard to the first question, I think it's important that one just reflect on some of the challenges that the CGE is faced with. If you look at the action plan of the CGE, there were some quick fixes, you know, closing the bank accounts and things like that. That has been done, and I think my colleague has indicated that we're happy with that. If you look at the rest of the action plan and the feedback, it however relates more to structural issues. Firstly, appointing people in the right positions, developing policies, and then of course comes implementation of the policies. So one needs to take that into account, that it will take longer to fix that and to get to the desired result. If I can use the example of supply chain management. The supply chain management unit has been established in December. So that unit will now make sure that all the policies and procedures are in place, and then they will start to implement the policies and procedures. Everyone needs to be trained in the institution, and then the internal auditor, who has also been recently been appointed, will then start to do some internal audit work on those systems and procedures to test the effectiveness thereof. So it might still take some time for it to be fully effective and implemented. Yeah. So it's possible if you look at an audit outcomes point of view that there might still have been some transactions from April 2010 up to December, January 2011 that might still not comply purely because the systems and processes have only been implemented now. So one needs to take that in account. It's most definitely a process. I mean, once the CFO has been appointed, he will then also again focus on specific systems and policies. There's one important thing which one just shouldn't forget, and that is that in terms of the prior expenditure, maybe thinking back to 07, 08, to which most of these transactions relate, 07, 08, 08, 09, it's still important that the CGE should go and investigate all the credit card transactions and all the procurement transactions. Remember, the Auditor General only focused on some. So the ideal situation would be that they would still, in good time, go back and investigate all those transactions to determine if there are any others which have not been identified. And they do have an internal auditor now, so it should be possible to do that. There was another question on whether we look at quarterly reports. We do not look at the quarterly reports as they are released every quarter. As part of the audit process, we will first of all verify from a compliance point of view, did the entity submit the reports as required by the PFMA and Treasury regulations. So we will firstly do that. Secondly, we will go through those reports to identify risk. The Honourable Member has referred to possible under expenditure. If we then scrutinise the report, we might note under expenditure as a risk. And typically, such a risk would relate to performance information. If you've got under expenditure and yet you're reporting over performance, for instance, it would be a risk for us. So that is how we deal with it during the audit process. So I think in conclusion, when we do the audit this year, and we will most probably start in April, we will then be able to look at the systems that have been implemented now, and we will look at those systems in detail. But like I say, there's a possibility that before the implementation of those systems that there might still be some transactions where there might not be full compliance. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, do we still have any other questions to raise? Have they been all answered?
Maybe they're all.
Public protector, okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. There was a question that came from an Honourable Member regarding as to what's going to happen now. First of all, I just want to indicate that obviously we don't say that CG didn't do anything. I mean, they have some recommendations that they are implementing. Of course, there are some that they have not. There are some that, of course, falls within the National Assembly or the Ministry, whatever the case is. But as to what we're going to do now, the report was commissioned by the National Assembly. We have completed our mandate. We have forwarded it to the Speaker and to the committee sitting here. It's really up to them to see what is it that they do in the implementation of the report. But ordinarily, if it was a government institution with a person complaining to us as a public protector, we have the monitoring department that see to it that the recommendations are being implemented. In the event they are not, obviously we escalate the matter to Parliament and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Public Protector. Indeed, we do understand and we agree that some of the recommendations have to be implemented by Parliament. In terms of your report, if you look at one of the monitoring, you know, aspects of the report was to say that you will monitor the progress made with the implementation of the recommendations that were spelled out in paragraph 7 over the period of 6 months. And in terms of your monitoring, are these adhered to by the CGE?
Okay. Chair, as you remember, we submitted the report towards the end of last year. So far, we early this year, there has been no interaction with CGE as yet, and we just managed to get the report that they submitted before this committee recently. So now we're going to be scrutinizing that and having some structured meetings within that period to ask and to monitor the recommendations there.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I heard well. You said your involvement was commissioned by Parliament. Now you have done what you were commissioned to, and then you'll wait and see what Parliament is going to say. And you said if CGE was a government department, you could go on with monitoring. But now you are.
Okay. What if I may explain? What we're saying is that this is the report of Parliament we submitted to them. The issue of monitoring, of course, is a recommendation as well. If the committee and the parliament insist that we have to recommend, they may decide that obviously accountability of the executive is within them and they want to drive it themselves, that we can do.
Thank you, Honourable Members, and thank you, AG, thank you, Public Protector. I think, do you still want another bite, Member?
Yes.
Okay.
Nyamboka, I didn't understand you correctly. The monitoring, by whom?
Okay. Maybe I'll go back first on the mandate of the Public Protector. The Public Protector cannot and can't enforce its decisions. It makes a recommendation, and the implementation thereof is at the goodwill of the person that we make a recommendation to. What we normally do in the government departments is that we put our report to Parliament through the Speaker's office, and the executive authority responsible for that Parliament can be summoned by the Speaker in Parliament to find out why the set of recommendations are not being implemented. What basically I'm saying is that if Parliament, if that commission this report wants us to do the monitoring, we'll definitely do the monitoring. But the ultimate responsibility of the actual implementation will definitely be with the Speaker or with the committee and so forth to see that it's done, because we cannot enforce the executives or whoever to do what was made as a recommendation, but the National Assembly, the Parliament can.
Chairperson, I'll be very brief. You know,
okay.
I'm asking that because we must remember the Commission for Gender Equality is a Chapter 9 institution. They are, in fact, equal to the Public Protector, and then as Chapter 9 institutions, those institutions protecting constitutional, they were requested because of the problems that existed. But suppose now, at a stage where there is normality, and then we must recall that in actual fact, they are their partners, they are all Chapter 9
institution, protecting constitutional democracy, and then they are subject to the constitution, their independence and the like. That's why I was saying we should be careful as to when we say monitoring, we are not protruding on their independence. We expect the Commission for Gender Equality at the end to be able to stand on its shoes and continue to do its function normally when things are normal. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Honourable Sibanyoni, for reminding us. And I think we all understand, the mandate, given to the Chapter 9 institution vis-à-vis Parliament. Thank you very much for that clarity. And let me thank the public protector once more, and the AG, and the Office of the Federal General. Thank you very much. Can we now proceed to listen to the staff from the CGE? I don't know who is going to represent them. Okay, your name again, sir? Okay, Pulepule. Over to you then.
Can you want to?
Yeah.